Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community in Depth. And as we do once a month, we visit with people from Dakota County. The county seat is in Hastings, of course, and we're very happy to have in studio with us today Sheriff Joe Leko. He is here representing the Sheriff's Department, and it's a very important position, and we just could not be more excited to see you. How have you been?
Good. Busy, but good. Thanks, Mom.
So when you say busy, what does that mean? Because when I say busy, it means completely different than I'm sure what you mean busy.
Yeah, it's just there's a lot of moving parts in everything we do. When I say busy, I know that most might think that we're busy on the roads, which we are, and calls for service and things. But for my busy, it's been a lot of hiring and a lot of interviewing and a lot of working on retaining our people, the wellness of our people and things like that. We've been running short for a long time. Interviews every week. So a lot of our time has been going into that, investing in our people, because if we do that, they can do the work. But we're busy inside the office and outside, but it's just the weeks fly by.
When you talk about some of the challenges that you face, you are always looking for people, but I would assume what you're looking for from a recruitment standpoint is pretty specialized. Is the pool smaller, or what is the challenge?
Absolutely. Yeah, it is a narrow applicant pool. To become a peace officer in the state of Minnesota, you have to go to school for that, a minimum of 2 years, and then you have to go what they call skills portion, which is the hands-on. You're driving the car, handcuffing, shooting the gun, doing the defensive tactics, and then you take the post test, the Peace Officers Standards and Trainings test through the state to become eligible to be licensed. So there are steps to get there, though we've been looking at people that have tried to do career changes. Maybe they were selling cars, maybe they were in real estate, maybe they're in social work, but they want to come and serve in a different capacity. But they do have to go through that education. So with that, if you don't have enrollment in the schools, which we've seen drop significantly in the last 4 years, it also results in low applicant pools, numbers-wise, and that's happening. When I first got hired almost 30 years ago, I don't want to round up, but 27 years ago, there were over 300 people that put in for one or two jobs. Now we're lucky if we see a dozen for five jobs. So not saying they're not good people, but the numbers are just simply not there.
And so you saw, obviously, a big outflux, for lack of a better word, of people after probably, was it 2021? There was unrest, of course, in Minneapolis. Are we trying to backfill jobs where people maybe burnt out and left? Or is it retirements? Or what exactly? Or is it just, as you said, there are fewer people to choose from, and as people retire, there aren't as many to backfill?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. We've had our share of retirements in the last 3 years, and some of those retirements were accelerated, where maybe they would have stayed another 2 or 3 years, but due to the conditions at the time with the unrest and some of the view towards law enforcement within the state of Minnesota, at least, and I know it's concentrated in certain areas, but that still can have an effect on those that even work in areas where they're highly supported. They decided to leave earlier. So we've had some that left a couple years earlier as far as retirements. We've had some that just left the profession altogether and said it's not for us. And then we've had, on the front end with applicants, we've had people actually in school, I know personally, and in application processes where they just either discussed with their family, their spouse, or whatever it is, and said, I decided I'm not going to do this.
So they got to a certain point, and then they were even down the road? And
yeah, and they just, you know, saw what's going on in society and the view towards law enforcement, at least some of that narrative that people can see. And if you get sucked into that and you start believing that it's all negative towards law enforcement, which I know personally is not true. We have a lot of support, majority of support here in Dakota County, even across the state. But there's that small minority that is very loud, and it can intimidate some of your people even to get into the profession.
Do you feel that?
The negativity? I do when I look for it.
Okay.
You know, and I can look for it, but there's, you know, the job's difficult as it is.
I mean,
even before that. So I feel it. Do I choose to give attention to it? No, because I got better things to do.
You got real things to do,
right,
to worry about. You know, I do feel, though, that there has been a shift, and it's unfortunate. You know, like all things, they're all cyclical. I'm hoping that this will come back, just like people in the military used to be a negative, and now, you know, that's a positive for the most part. So I hope that that comes full circle for you, even in your career.
I do, too. I mean, if you look back even to 9/11, the number of people that enrolled or got into fire departments or police departments because they saw that happen, and they saw the heroic efforts and what happened behind that rescue, recovery, selflessness of all those public servants and heroes in New York and beyond. People want to be a part of that. And then when you see the other side of it, when they're ridiculed, put in jail, charged with a crime, killed, assaulted, disrespected, they look at that and go, why would I want to do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get paid well, but it's not, you don't get into this job to make money. That's not what it's about. So if you're looking looking to make money, this is not the job to do it. Even though I think we get paid well for what we do, but it's more so the public service side of it that fills your cup and helping people. I know that sounds cliche, but you really do help people. And that's what our people that continue to work and have worked with us, that's the reason why they do it. They really do fill their cup that way by helping others.
You mentioned the word respect. I do feel that across the country, though, we've kind of lost respect for many things, for law enforcement, teachers, I think doctors. Everyone thinks that they're an expert on their disease because they Googled it before they went to their doctor appointment. I think it's across the board, but certainly the lack of respect in your position is really hard to see. That is what keeps us from being an uncivilized world without law enforcement or law abiding people or somebody to hold the peace. We'd be in anarchy, wouldn't we? I mean, it would be terrible.
Absolutely. You talk about respect. I think it's just with everybody. If you look at, you know, we talked a bit before we went on air here as far as how social media can impact people. I don't know how beneficial it really is. It just seems like it creates dialogue. But as we talked about, if you don't share the opinion with somebody, you're an outcast. I mean, and they'll knock you down. It seems like that's what I see. There's not that respect as far as respecting others' opinions.
Right. Let's agree to disagree, that whole thing.
Absolutely. It's my way or you're not
Delete.
In my camp, therefore
I'm unfriending you.
Or I'm going to go after you and argue you to the ground. I mean, that's not how
so
we
dumb.
Get things done. You know, the great place about America, obviously, is you can have different opinions and you can have dissent, but we have to treat each other with respect. That's one of our core values that I always talk about with our staff that leads all of our contacts. You will treat everybody with respect, whether it's in our jail, on our streets, in our lobbies, whatever it might be. And they might call you every name in the book, but you will always treat them with respect. You will not become the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I just wish that everyone followed that, but we're seeing less and less of that, especially even in our profession on simple traffic stops where, you know, there's always been times where people don't comply or they're either intoxicated or under the influence or they just want to resist. But we're seeing it more and more where people are either just fleeing in their cars or they're just not complying with orders to get out of the car. And we've seen that in several high profile cases around here where if people that are getting pulled over on the roadway or told they're under arrest in a home just complied with that and went through the court process, the due process that they are entitled to have, all their rights, we wouldn't have a lot of these incidences. But they want to fight their court battles on the street to show that we're wrong, shouldn't be arrested, or they feel like they're not going to be held accountable if they do flee or assault. Because a lot of times people are arrested and they get right back out on the street. And that's frustrating on our side too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's changed a lot. It used to be, not saying there wasn't danger out there before, but we're encountering more and more of that type of attitude, I guess, by some. Can be create very dangerous situations for us.
So that's part of why you feel that wellness is so important, to help bring people's wellness back, because it's such a stressful position. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's a key component. It's one of our highest priorities, if not the highest priority at our office right now, the wellness of our people, to make sure that they are, take away the lack of respect or the narrative we might see out there, anti-police, this and that. The job's hard enough as it is. You're going to fatal crashes. You're going to homes where there's kids that are being neglected, or you're seeing a lot of trauma, and you have to be able to deal with that physically and mentally and spiritually to make sure that you're not harboring that and then it later festers later on where you're resulting in trying to band-aid it by drinking or acting out or whatever it is. So we got to make sure that we have open avenues for people to talk through.
Is that new, do you think, in your industry? You mentioned you've been in this industry since 97. I mean, that seems kind of like a soft skill that people are developing more recently. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is more recent. And
I think it's wonderful.
It is. I'll be honest. I mean, I'm not saying that I had to be sold on it, because when I started, it was get up, brush it off, and get back to work, right? And I was fine with that because that's kind of how I grew up,
sure,
you know, just
right.
get back up,
right.
resiliency, grit, whatever it is, to make sure you got to just continue to get on with the job.
But
with
some
that said,
of that, yeah, some of that grit is not about, if you've seen something horrific, you kind of have to pause and reflect and think about it instead of just stuffing it, in
absolutely.
My opinion.
Yeah, no, you can't,
that's
you can't
not
dismiss
grit.
It. That's not grit. No, grit, but you know, that's how it was kind of formed with us.
Of course.
When I started, if you are impacted emotionally from something you're too soft.
You're out.
Yeah, you're not going to hack it in this job. We have to recognize that we are people and we are seeing trauma unlike many other professions don't. You know, if
right.
you're a doctor, obviously, or
right.
can really impact you. So we got to make sure we're taking care of our people. And I talked about resiliency. It doesn't mean that those things, you can just roll them off your back. Resiliency is just being able to go through those processes and healthy process of trauma, to acknowledge where you're at, to know that, yes, that really is something that's keeping me up at night. I can't sleep. And then putting a you know, focus on that to make sure you can heal. That's new, and credit to our profession to recognize that, because otherwise we're going to have people burning out and they won't stay more than 10 years because it's just too much weight to take.
And probably people have burnt out all along, but maybe they've probably stayed in the job, and then that is not a healthy thing for them either. Well, that's great. And so the retention piece, is that part of it? Because you put so much effort into finding these folks, wouldn't it be great to be able to keep them?
I often say that our recruitment tool is our retention, especially when the low applicant pools are out there. We have to keep the ones we have. You can't adjust the water to fill the pool because it's coming out in a drip right now. So we got to keep that pool full, right? So that's by avoiding putting holes in the side of it and making sure that we're taking care of our people. If you can get in that spot where you can take care of your people and increase that retention, that decreases the need to keep hiring, you know. So
did the wellness part come out of was it from the bottom up, where people that were maybe on the streets and feeling this great stress, they were saying, I don't know if I can do this, I think I might need more help? Or was it something that was recognized from above, or is this going on everywhere?
It is across the nation. I think a lot of the law enforcement leaders across the nation recognize this. They started sharing stories of people that are, you know, leaving early due to post-traumatic stress or suicide or moving towards drinking or whatever self-soothing areas they want to go to. We have to take care of our people. And internally here at the sheriff's office, retired Sheriff Tim Leslie and I were talking about those things probably early in his first term in 2015. And we recognize that as well from the buzz that's going on. We've noticed people that get burned out, and him and I have experience too. We know what it feels like. So we have to acknowledge that there's that need. We have peer support at our sheriff's office where I'm not involved in that at all. People, there's a core team of peers that employees can go to and say, hey, that traffic crash really messed me up. I need to talk about that. I don't need to know about that, right? So, but the peers can take care of each other. Right. That's great. And then we also have, obviously, the professional support through the county. We also have a psychologist that's just strictly for the sheriff's office to meet one-on-one with, and at least meet once annually with her to kind of check in and see how you're doing, check up from the neck up, we call it. I know a lot of other agencies are following that too. So it's really putting that acknowledgement and recognition that we got to take care of our bodies and our minds to be able to be successful, healthy, productive, and have long careers.
And how are your bodies and minds doing since the tragedy in Burnsville?
Yeah, I wish I could say we're doing good. That's something we're not going to get over. As long as we're alive, not just in our careers, but for those of us working in this field. I mean, Burnsville has, obviously they're their own agency, but they're within Dakota County. We're the third largest county in the state, but we work very closely together, and our people know Burnsville, and they know the officers. It's a small world once you get into law enforcement and the families of law enforcement. So it's going to take a long time. We're helping in as many ways as we can. I know there's some benefits out there to help with the families of the fallen. During the weeks after the tragedy, we helped along with the city of Hastings and all the other cities within Dakota County to cover Burnsville and their calls for service, along with the fire departments and whatnot too. But if that rocks you, and it can impact you no matter if you're a brand new deputy officer or you're someone that's been around as long as I have and some of the other chiefs. We don't need reminders of how dangerous the job is, but that one's going to impact us for a very long time, and Burnsville as well. Lives are forever changed.
Mm-hmm.
So tragic.
So tragic. So I know that your jail, unfortunately, is probably full, right?
Believe it or not, we're actually not full.
Okay. Is that good or bad? That's good, right?
I think it's good.
Is it good or bad? I can't tell.
Well, it's changed since COVID as far as our average daily populations. We have 263 beds. Our average right now is about 180. So we're, you know, 80 beds short as far as, not saying we have to meet that, but 10 years ago, we were full. I mean, we were over 280. I mean, we're 100 over. So I don't know what's changed. I think some of it is the lower level offenses. People are being kicked loose and coming back for court and all that. But with that said, we do have some dangerous individuals that probably are getting second, third, fourth, and fifth chances by getting released, and maybe they should be best by sitting in our jail. But it's starting to slowly climb. And it has since COVID, but it's maybe 10 a year on average as far as, so I'm anticipating we'll be around 190 this year or
okay.
whatnot.
And how many of those folks are brand new to this system versus repeat offenders?
Maybe 25% are new, have okay. never been in our jail. Doesn't say that they haven't been in a jail,
okay.
but roughly 75% of our detainees in our jail have been there before in our jail, and over half of our population don't even reside in Dakota County. So we're housing, you know, arrestees from Hennepin County, Ramsey County.
Because
mainly.
Their counties are full?
No, they're coming into our county and committing crimes.
No, that's not good.
So, yeah, so we're no matter where you're from, if you commit the crime in Dakota County, that's where you're being charged. So a lot of our detainees, inmates are from other counties coming to our county committing crimes. Yeah. Does that surprise you?
Yeah, it kind of does.
Yeah. So we've informed our commissioners on that, and I've spoken publicly about that. And I know that, you know, aside from Ramsey and Hennepin, that might not be the case, but Washington County, I assume, is probably the same, where they're the majority of their inmates are from other counties.
That's tough to hear. Well, I know that you have something going on in your jail that has an acronym, and it really focuses on folks that are detainees that, as you mentioned, that have some mental health issues, perhaps. Is that a fair way of saying it?
Yes.
Can you explain that program?
So we are in the process of building an integrative health unit. It's roughly a 25-bed unit on the footprint of our jail, just alongside of our jail. So if you drive on 4th Street and you come up to the high school there at General Sieben, you'll see construction going on. That's our integrative health unit that's going to be opened up in about a year, next February 25. We'll have 25 beds there, and we will be housing our own inmates. We're not housing from other areas, just Dakota County arrestees or inmates that are having special medical needs. Usually it's mental health, mental illness, chemical dependency. How I tried to explain it, because I try to do it on simple terms so even I can understand it. But if you look at a hospital, it's like having, you know, your most critical patients are in the ICU. That's what this is. It's really our ICU, where we can have those inmates that have those care needs in one location where we can, you know, monitor them better and provide the appropriate care to them. Because right now we put them in cells with our general population, and it's just a four walls, white walls, cement floor. Somebody that maybe is experiencing a crisis or in mental health, that is not the best place to put them, right? So we're going to put them in this more conducive environment where there's actually natural light coming through. We don't have carpet on the walls like you got, but we have some, you know, paintings and whatnot to make it more of a inviting location. I don't mean to make a joke of that, but it's more of an inviting location, you know, so they can not go further into their crisis by staying in our jail.
Right.
So.
Well, carpet on the walls is very helpful.
Well, maybe we'll consider that. It still hasn't been. Still
Dan can give you some tips where he gets his carpet samples.
Okay. I'll hit him up.
So good to see you, and our time is up. Thank you so much. Anything else you want to tell our listeners?
No, I just want to, on behalf of Burnsville and all of our chiefs here in Dakota County and myself, I want to thank everybody for all the support throughout the tragedy we all experienced and the outreach. There's been so many that reached out and supported us, brought things to the office or the Hastings Police Department just to show their appreciation. Just know that you've been seen and heard. And we appreciate that. We need that support and to hear that from you.
Well, we appreciate all that you do as well. Thank you. Sheriff Joe Lico is the sheriff of Dakota County, and you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings.